Okay, if there's any more comments, I want to move on to Rav Kasach. Rav Yosef Kasach. And he will be the last figure we do. The very, very fascinating personality. I want to begin by reading you something. I just plugged his name into the internet, and I came up with something. It's Hebrew. It's called, I can send a link to you. It's interesting. It's Harry Potter, Be'eretz Hadar Da'im. And let me just read you the translation of the beginning of the first paragraph of this article, which, again, I just found randomly. He says, it was one Shabbos when my children asked me why we can't do magic like Harry Potter. I answered them, because your father is a Dardai. They said, what's a Dardai? A Dardai is a man who only has to come near a magician, and the magician loses all his powers and becomes a normal person, a regular person. Even a great magician like Dumbledore, your father just has to come near him, and he becomes a regular person from the street. If your father just looks at, I don't know these names, I don't know Harry Potter, Hagrid, I think, the one who guards the territory, Shomer HaKarkaot, I don't know, tell me what that is. But if you just look at him, he becomes a katan, like a child. Also, Lord Voldemort, I think I'm pronouncing it right. The person, you don't say his name, he can't come close to your father. It doesn't pay to take your father on a trip to England, because he'll simply come near Beit Sefer Hogwarts for magicians, and the school will become like any other school. And he goes on and on and on. And then the children ask me, how can you do all these great things? That is, turn all these magicians into regular people. I answered them that I learned from a great rabbi, Mori Yosef Kasach, and he taught me all these things. And then they asked, can I teach them also? And I replied, Bevadai, Bevadai, certainly. What is this world I'm talking about now? I'm taking you to Yemen and to one of the greatest figures of our time, Rav Yosef Kasach. Some figures, their influence and significance declines over time. In fact, that's most people, to be honest. I could give you names of rabbis who towered over their era. Gedolei Yisrael, Gedolei Gedolei Yisrael. And today, most people have never heard of them. They're not that significant. Even people who we knew, take a Rav Moshe Feinstein. His influence today, we spoke about this in our classes on Rav Moshe, is nowhere near his influence in his lifetime. I mean, and that's the normal way of things. It's the very special people. It's the unusual people. I'm not saying they're greater than Rav Moshe, but you look at the Rav, and there's reasons why the Rav is much more influential now than in his lifetime. Rav Yisrael Yaakov Weinberg, much more influential. Rav Shach, hardly has any influence today. It depends on the figure, on the era. Rav Yosef Kasach, his influence is growing. And let's talk about him. And his achievements are incredible. He is the only rabbi, other than the Sri Deish, in the post-war years, who was regarded as a Gadol B'Yisrael, Halachic authority, and also accepted by the academic Jewish scholars. Shlomo Carlebach is another one. You're right, his influence grew bigger. In fact, it's because his influence grew so big, and they came out with that book about him. They were treating him like an Admor, a Chassidus Rebbe, that some people don't like him so much because of certain things he's alleged. I don't even know if it's alleged he did. They decided they have to fight back. And all the stuff that came out about the sexual abuse issues, that never would have come out had his followers not insisted on making him into such, like I said, a Rebbe. They came out with the book of Maisios, stories, the great things he did. It's a bit of a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde phenomenon with him. Even after his passing, Rav Kasach's followers continue in his path. And I say, his influence increases, maybe not in the Dardai element, as I'll speak about, but in his significance as a scholar. Because there was a conference, Stanley Emerson, who's listening right now, told me about, and I found it on the internet, about it was like last week, and it mentioned there's only a few hundred Dardaiim left. So I don't know if that influence, and most of you don't know even what a Dardai is, I'll explain in a few minutes, but his significance as a scholar is growing. But his followers are publishing, they've come out with four volumes of Masorah Yosef. Here is one of the volumes devoted to his ideas and to his significance. Here's a picture, by the way, of Rav Kafach. I don't know if you can see it. He adopted the Ashkenazic dress. Now, before dealing with Rav Kafach, though, we must deal with his grandfather. Because it all begins with his grandfather, the man they called Hayashish, the elder, Mori Yichya Kafach. Here is a picture of him. I published it also on the Sfarim blog. The great Mori Yichya Kafach. It's impossible to understand Mori Yosef. Mori Yusuf, without Mori Yichya. In medieval times, what was Yemen like? Yemen was the place of philosophy. They were the great followers of the Rambam, halachically and philosophically. Rav Kafach published numerous things from the Yemenite scholars from medieval times. Tzvi Langerman, great scholar in Israel at Bar Ilan, he's published a number of things. We know, or we're told, that the Yemenites even added the Rambam's name to their Kaddish. Yet by the 17th century, things had changed. New influences had entered Yemen, and I refer to, in particularly, Kabbalah, and later, Kabbalah of the Ari. This was to have enormous influence in Yemen. Yemen was to become a place of Kabbalah. It was influenced in their prayers, in their biblical commentaries, in their halakha. The notion that Yemenites decide halakha like the Rambam is false. That was true up until the 17th century. And then the Shulchan Aruch comes in, and they become Shulchan Aruch Jews together with the Rambam. But they were not strict Rambamists. In fact, that's one of the things that Kafach is going to go back to. They haven't been Maimonideans in the halachic sphere for hundreds of years. Kabbalah became a very important part of their life. The Maharitz, Rav Yechia Salech, was an important 18th century halachist. And he has many volumes of halacha. And he published a Sidur that's used by many of the Yemenites. And basically all the Lurianic material is in the Sidur. But he still kept a number of the Yemenite traditions. But his Sidur is used by those Yemenites who today are called the Baladis. And this is full of Kabbalah, the Ari, Luria, Lurianic Kabbalah. Another branch of the Yemenites, they're known as the Shami. And their Sidur is a complete adoption of the Lurianic Kabbalistic rites. So the Baladis have a good deal of Lurianic Kabbalah, and the Shamis are completely went over and gave up their old minhagim and tefillah and other things and adopted the Lurianic approach. The Baladis, only in certain respects, adopted the Kabbalah. The Shami decide halakha based on the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, and the Baladi use the Rambam and the Maharitz, Salach, but Yechid Salach is influenced by the Kabbalah. The old approach, as I said, was to decide the Rambam, but the Shulchan Aruch came in and began to have a great influence on much of Yemenite Jewry. And the Shulchan Aruch, of course, is influenced by Kabbalah. So, the Kitzer, in short, Yemenite Jewry, by the beginning of the 20th century, is suffused with Kabbalah, Shami completely, Baladi to a large extent, and all full details for those who are interested. A book came out last year or so, Tumurot, B'moreshet Yahadut Teiman, B'hashpat HaShulchan Aruch, B'Kabbalat Ha'ari, in which Aaron Jemani, a scholar at Bar Ilan, a Yemenite, charts how the Shulchan Aruch and the Ha'ari changed Yemenite Jewry in the last few hundred years. And for both of these groups, Kabbalah was an important source of Jewish learning. Regardless, when I said that the Baladis, Kabbalah did not influence their halakha as much as the Shami, but it still was a central feature of what they studied. Yeah, I mean, you have this other, Sharabi, though, is not as, he's important, but he's not as important. We can't go into all of them. There's many important, Vav Nun Hei, it's pronounced Wenna, there's the leader of the Shamis. I mean, you have many important Yemenite figures. If we want to have another class, we can discuss other important Yemenite figures. But Rav Sharabi was obviously a very important Makubal in Yemen. This is how matters stood to the 20th century. It was then that a group of scholars, though their leader was Rav Yechiel Kafach, who for a time was chief rabbi of Yemen in Sana'a, He then gave it up because he didn't want to devote the time to it, but he remains on the basin. It's amazing. He's on the basin with the people he's going to have this great machokas with. They begin a reform, nothing less than a reform of Yemenite Jewry. Kafak, as I said, was one of the leading scholars in Sana, the capital. He was the Chacham Bashi for a while. There was a Chacham Bashi in the Ottoman Empire who was over, he had authority pretty much over the whole Ottoman Empire, to a certain extent authority. And then you had a local Chacham Bashi. He was a Chacham Bashi in Yemen. There's a picture of him, nice picture maybe you could see here. That's Rav Yechya with two other Yemenite scholars, his opponents. What was Mori Yechya's reforms? Well, first, religion education, let's speak about it. In his Beit Midrash, they focused on Talmud and Mishnah and Halacha. The other Batei Midrash focused a lot on Midrash and Zohar. The study of Kabbalah was central to Yemenite religious life. What did Rav Kafach do, Rav Yechya? He brought back the old way of doing things. He said, Yemenite Jewry has been infected with this Kabbalistic ideology. We have to go back to Yemenite Jewry's original approach. That is the study of the Rambam, Rav Sadia Gaon, Rav Yehuda Halevi, Rav Dachi ibn Bakuda. And he began a movement to study these works in Arabic. These were texts that literally had not been studied in the original in hundreds of years. In fact, Rav Yosef tells about how his grandfather would send him out to the Genizas, and they would find old, from hundreds of years old, texts of these writings. And their job was then to copy them. Some of them was almost destroyed, eaten by the bugs. And Rav Yosef writes about how he would sit, and they became him and his friends. Their job was to copy by hand all of these texts. They were also able to get publications from Europe, especially Germany. There was a whole movement to publish from in the original Arabic with German translations a number of these important medieval texts. Mori Yechya begins to speak out against religious life in Yemen. What is Yemenite Jewry like? Yemenite Jews believed all sorts of things. But what most people, I think, would call superstition, or at least many, not to judge, but demons, segulot, cameos, Ayin Hara, all things like this. I have a whole book on the Ayin Hara, in which it talks about how all the bad things the Ayin Hara does to you. From the Rambam's tradition, from the rationalist tradition, this is all nonsense. This is all foolishness. And yet this was the way of life of Yemenite Jewry. Big rabbis were writing cameos, amulets, all things. And here, Mori Yechya is coming on the scene and saying, this is all falsehood. Sheker Gamor, Avodah Zarah even, some of these things. He sees Yemenite Jewry for hundreds of years sunk in a swamp of what he sees as a distortion of true Judaism. And he's not tolerant of popular beliefs like his grandson would be. And who gets the blame? The blame is Kabbalah. Because Kabbalah created a mentality in which all these things can happen. And I'll get back to Kabbalah in a minute. So you can see we have here a real reformist movement, which was joined by a number of the greatest scholars in Sana. What's the classic notion of a reformist movement? Reformist movements want to go back to the original truth before it's distorted. And that's what Rav Yechya wants to do. Go back to the medieval Yemenite intellectual tradition, a philosophical tradition. He also valued secular studies. You see him in this picture. He's not such a good, he has a clock here. But he was into inventions, and his grandson followed in this, into botany and into science, all the different sciences, but for them it's not secular. Rav Yosef has an article called, quote, secular studies in quotes in the teachings of the Rambam. These are not secular studies. The Rambam tells you that the command, the Ahata Eitan Elohecha, how do we love God? Well, how can we love God? We can only love God by knowing God. It's not a mystical love. We love God by knowing God. How do you know God? We can't know God's essence. We know God through his actions, through his creations. And look at the beginning of Yesodei Torah, the first four parakim. You have physics and metaphysics and chemistry there. When you study the human body, when you study chemistry, when you study physics and science and all this, you see the magnificence of God. You see the teleology, how everything works together. That's how you appreciate God. These are not secular studies. These are Torah. You don't say a Birkas Torah, perhaps, because it's not the actual text of Torah literature. But these are not just Torah. These are the highest levels of Torah. These are Maisim Bereshis. And Maisim Bereshis goes ahead of Talmud study and Halacha study, because this is how you learn to love God and understand God, through his actions. So these are not secular studies, and this is a revival of the Rambam's medieval intellectual tradition. But this wouldn't have been so controversial. Even the criticism of the superstitions would not have been so controversial. However, he took on Kabbalah. He rejected it in toto. Now, it's one thing in medieval times to reject Kabbalah. The Rambam, without question, would have regarded Kabbalah as a heresy. And if you know the Kabbalistic notion of the Sefirot, it is not monotheism like most people think of monotheism. Jewish monotheism, Kabbalah is part of Judaism, so we have to include it and say that Jewish monotheism is not a complete monotheism like most people think. The Sefirot it doesn't really matter. Some think that they're part of the essence of God, others think that they're a creation. Whatever it is, you pray the Sefirot. Sefirot act. The Ein Sof really is behind the scenes. This is not the simple God of Maimonides. It's not the simple God that most people are taught, and there's reasons why they developed this conception. But you can also see why the Rivash quotes in one of his Tshuvot, the critics of Kabbalah said that whereas the Christians have 3, we have 10. And I've often said that Judaism really cannot be opposed to the Trinity. We have no objections to the Trinity. You'll hear Rabbi said all the time, it's not true. We object to the incarnation, the idea that a human can be God, but we cannot object to the Trinity per se, because the justifications given for 3 = 1 for the Trinity are the exact same justifications you can give for the Sefirot. So, and this point, by the way, is made by Rabbi Yehuda Aryeh Mimodna in his anti-Christian polemic Magen Vecheref, that we really don't have a problem with the Trinity. For polemic reasons, people talk about it, but they don't know anything about Kabbalah. Because, if you're going to oppose the Trinity because 3 can't be 1, well, then how can 10 be 1? And the reasons are the exact same. But it's the incarnation, the idea that God can assume human form. That is the great heresy, as Munna points out. And that, of course, we must reject. And that's what makes Christianity idolatrous, certainly from a Jewish perspective. And Rav Yechia takes on Kabbalah, and this creates an enormous, enormous controversy. I spoke about the greatest controversy in Orthodoxy in the last half of the 20th century, which was the Langer case. Perhaps the Langer case, that was in Halacha. There were other great controversies over Zionism, but the controversy over Kabbalah in Yemen was also one of the great controversies in the first half of the 20th century. And we will pick up with that. I see it's already... Oh, no, we have another minute or two, so let me go on. Questions. I find Yemenites becoming Chabad. It's interesting. You find all sorts of people. You have Yemenites becoming Breslov as well. If you go to Uman, you'll see Yemenites there. In terms of the people following Rav Kafach today, there are, believe it or not, there's still some Ashkenazim. If anyone knows about Rabbi Chait's yeshiva, there's a yeshiva in Far Rockaway. It's a mysterious yeshiva. It's Rabbi Chait. He's a musmach of the Rav and also Rav Moshe Feinstein, the big Talmud Chacham. But he is a follower. Outsiders do not know this because they have series of tapes which only insiders can get. But speak to anyone who goes to Rabbi Chait's yeshiva. They are opposed to Zohar, opposed to Kabbalah, and they see themselves as followers of Mori Yechia's tradition, which I'll explain in more detail what is so problematic about Kabbalah and why does he see it as idolatrous? And we'll get into that next class. Unitarians are not really classic Christians. Unitarians believe in one God. Jesus is not part of the Godhead. Jesus is simply a great human, a great individual. So Unitarians don't count when you talk about Christians. But I'm just talking from a purely theological perspective that you find medievals, no question about it. I can show you Danny Lasker has a book, Jewish Philosophical Polemics Against Christianity. And you can read all the great philosophical polemics by our Rishonim, the philosophers, that is, against the Trinity and against Christianity. The problem is, that those same were not Mekubalim. Those were not those were philosophers, and they were also opposed or would have been opposed to Kabbalah. The same arguments they used against Christianity would be used against Kabbalah. You don't find the Mekubalim using those sorts of arguments against the Christians. You have people like Avraham Abulafia. He was opposed to the whole idea of the Sefirot. But you don't find the Mekubalim using those sorts of arguments that the philosophers are using against the Trinity, because their whole conception of the Sefirot, of ten being one, and that they're all aspects of the one, but they also are separate. And that's a hard approach. I don't think most people understand what Kabbalah is all about, the notion of Adam Kadmon, the idea of the Sefirot, that you can pray to the Sefirot, that the Ein Sof. The Ein Sof doesn't have any contact with the world. The Jews were not taken out of Egypt by the Ein Sof. The Jews were taken out of Egypt by one of the Sefirot, the highest Sefirot, perhaps. What's the highest we can get to? Keter, or depending on which system you're in. But the Ein Sof is behind everything. We cannot have any connection to the Ein Sof. So basically, you have two types of a God. You have a Godhead that you speak to and you can see who's active in the world, and then you have a Godhead who has no connection to the world. And these are very problematic if you have a conception of a simple God, which Judaism does not, because Kabbalah has been around now for at least 1,000 years, maybe going back according even to Talmudic times. And we cannot speak in terms of simple approach to God. There's a simple view and there's a complicated view. But Rav Kafach, as we'll see, he thought that Kabbalah was a disaster and that it has created idolatry in the Jewish population. Even if in theory you could say he's right, it's impossible to say this. I'll repeat this next class. But the Ramban was a great Mekubal. How can you... It's very hard. So Rav Mori Yechiah would say the Ramban made a mistake. He's not going to judge him as a heretic, but he made a mistake, and it's so hard to adopt this position today, and then you'll see that his grandson did not go all the way. His grandson was willing to be more tolerant than the grandfather. I think part of the problem is that the grandfather did not have the same tradition we have. We have so many Mekubalim. The Vilna Gaon is a great Mekubal. What is the Vilna Gaon? What does it mean to Rav Mori Yechiah Kafach? I mean, it's not part of his tradition, so... for us to say that the Vilna Gaon was wrong on this, I mean, how can you say such a thing? But if he's not part of your tradition, who's the Vilna Gaon? We'll pick up on this next class. Let me just see if there's more questions. And next class is the last Tula class. Yes, the Kabbalah of the Ramban is different than Lurianic Kabbalah. Lurianic Kabbalah takes matters even further. But when you deal with this, take, for example, the Zohar. The Zohar is one of the things that Mori Yechiah is off against. But the Sefirot go back. They go back very far. They predate the Lurianic Kabbalah. I don't know what the Ramban's conception is about the Sefirot. They're found already in the Zohar. That he saw as a form of idolatry. So certain Kabbalistic ideas maybe don't cross the line for him. But once you deal with the Sefirot, once you deal with the idea that we influence God, this is basic to Kabbalah, that God is influenced by us, that the notion of Ein Sof, as being beyond any connection, these are the sorts of things that just don't work. Kellner published a book last year called Maimonides and Mysticism, or something like that, in which he shows how the medieval philosophical tradition was triumphed over by the Kabbalistic tradition. And we're living in a Kabbalistic age, even if we don't know it. Look, we say Kabbalah Shabbos. That's all Kabbalistic. They didn't say this in Yemen, in Rav Kafach circles. No one said it before a few hundred years ago. You say the Ramban was pre-Rashbi. Yeah, I'm not an expert in Kabbalah. It would be interesting to look in to see what aspects of pre-Zohar Kabbalah. It's not just the Ramban, it's the Raivad, it's Rav Yitzchak Saginaw, it's the rest of them. There's a whole tradition, there's Chikatila. How much of them Kafach would also be in opposition to? Let's not forget that Abulafia was opposed to the Sefirot. Abulafia saw himself as following in the path of the Rambam. Avraham Abulafia wrote a whole Kabbalistic commentary on the Mor Nevuchim. So he's not in opposition to Kabbalah per se, He's in opposition to Zoharic and Lurianic Kabbalah, and that's really the only Kabbalah that they were interested in Yemen or in Europe. No one talks about Cordoveran Kabbalah. No one talks about pre-Zohar Kabbalah. The only Kabbalah that matters are the canonical Kabbalah, which is Zoharic, and Lurianic Kabbalah. I mean, the Ari himself declared that all other forms of Kabbalah are not to be regarded as significant once Lurianic Kabbalah comes on the scene. So that's what he's dealing with. He's dealing with Tzimtzum, and he's dealing with all the things, you know, the Shviras HaKelim, the very advanced notions of the Sfirot. This is what was the religion of the Jews of Yemen. It's not our religion. And we live typical Maimonidean Jew lifetimes, I think most of us. So how many people have any contact, unless you're in Chabad, with Kabbalah? We live regular Jewish lives. We could live our whole life, and as Novi Huda says, Ein Yesek Benister, have nothing to do with Kabbalah. But in Yemen, every Jew, this was part of their life. They lived it. So it wasn't like, in our perspective, Kabbalah, we say it's holy, it's true, but we don't involve ourselves. It's somewhere out there. It's there for maybe the elite to study. But this was part of the popular religion. And so it's a very different circumstance. So you mentioned Rav Yaakov Hillel, and then we can Rav Yaakov, Ares mentions Rav Yaakov Moshe Hillel. Ares, do you know where Rav Yaakov Moshe Hillel is from? You can bring the Torah in motion, maybe. He is from India. Until he was 17 years old. Yisrael knows it. He was an artist or a musician. He comes to Gateshead. He becomes a big Talmud Chacham. Then he becomes a big Mekubal, but not a practical Kabbalist. He has the book Tamim Tiya against all these magicians in Israel, the ones who read your palms, the ones who give you cameos. But he is from the Iraqi community, a great Kabbalistic scholar, and obviously an opponent of Mori Yechia Kafach. And he's written a good deal about Kabbalah, but his Kabbalah is a Lurianic Kabbalah, and it's very troubling for one who's in the philosophical mindset. You read this sort of thing, it's hard to know what to make of it. You say you went to Oxford. I don't know about that. Never heard that even. Email me. I know he went to Gateshead, and then he came close to Salomon Sassoon. I never heard that he had any college education whatsoever, so I don't know about that. I'm not sure whether that's a rumor or not. In any event, I've never met him, but I know people have, and he's probably worth speaking to. When he comes to Israel, he gets in, and he becomes crowned, really, one of the leading Kabbalistic scholars of our time. There's still a Kabbalistic yeshiva, Beit El, and there's Shar Shamayim, and then there's Yaakov Moshe Hillel, who's published a number of works on Kabbalah, and has published many Kabbalistic texts. At the end of the day, there aren't many people today who study Kabbalah, and he's part of a tradition. Don't forget, the Iraqi tradition of Kabbalah, it goes through the Ben Ish Chai. The Ben Ish Chai, the most important of the Mekubalim in the last generation of Iraqi Jewry before the State of Israel, at the end of his Rav Pa'alim, he has Tshuvot, Sheol to Tshuvot in Kabbalah. It's unique. He has the first part is Halacha, and the second part is Kabbalah. So there's a long tradition of Kabbalah. Rav Avadia quotes Kabbalah also, but he's not a Mekubal. There's a long tradition of Kabbalah. Kaduri, of course, or Kaduri is a Iraqi. And that's the tradition. Okay, Madonna. Well, Madonna, the Havdil, I guess you could say. I don't know. In my next foreign blog post, which should be out later this week, I mention a bit about this Kabbalah Center. It's definitely Kabbalah, but it's pop Kabbalah, and it's not. There's very little resemblance to mainstream Kabbalah. There's no need for Shmiras HaMitzvos. I went into one of these places once, and I'll tell you that Rabbi Ashlag, who was a real Mekubal, who this Berg sees himself as a follower of Ashlag, did not really believe in private property. He basically was a communist. And yet these shysters out in Los Angeles, they've figured out how to become multi-millionaires and live in mansions through the Kabbalah Center. So, okay, very good. Bergism, exactly. He claims to have a PhD and won't tell anyone where it's from, and he claims to be a musmach and won't tell anyone where it's from also. What it means is that they had such great respect for the Rambam. I don't know if it's true, if they actually added his name. That's the report we have from medievals, but I don't think we have it from Yemenites. I think we have it from people in Egypt. The Rambam, remember, when they were suffering hard times, he wrote the letter on Yemen. They had such a respect for him that after he died, in their Kaddish, they would mention, they have a passage there about our teachers, they say, and then the great Rambam, etc. They would always remember the Rambam in their Kaddish as a great man. Yes, that's the book, Jody Myers. Jody Myers saw his two certificates. Well, Harvey, for next week, maybe find out if it's in the book what the two certificates are from. I mean, there's smicha and there's smicha. Shlomo Carlbach also gave smichas. I don't know if we consider those smichas. Michael Lerner received smicha from Zalman Schachter. So, I mean, who gave the smichas? I think it makes a big difference. Eugene Borowitz can give a smicha, too. So I don't know what that means. If it's from Rav Ashlag, then it's a valid smicha. Certainly, he never received a PhD anywhere, but I would like to know who gave him the smichas. Look, he used to be much more of a normal person. He could have received smicha from great rabbanim, and maybe today he doesn't want to embarrass them. He doesn't want them to feel embarrassed because they disagree with his derech, so he doesn't reveal it. I state for a fact he has no PhD. He could very well have smichas. All I'm pointing out is that he won't tell people about it, and that might be a good reason for that. It's hard to say. Okay. In any event, we have a full day next class because we really have to get into Rav Yosef Kafach, and see you all next week. It's been a great semester, and we'll end it greatly as well. Okay, thank you, everyone. See you next week.
Thank you. Good night, everybody. Live with us.